Mango Terry? Put it in reverse, Terry!
I can't play! The ball is just sitting there, Terry, and I can't hit it!
Damn you people, this is golf! My country!
I want you to kill every golfer on the course.
Tell me if I'm wrong, Sandy, but if I kill all the golfers, they're gonna lock me up and throw away the key.
What are you doing?
I'm fixing a divot.
Oh.
He's fixing a divot!
Welcome to episode 43 of the First Tee Jitters podcast. Gang's all here tonight. We did not get to do one last week. We were very busy last week. William, you were especially busy. There's a lot going on at Kiowa at the Ocean Course. I'm going to read you a little something here. It says, I failed many times in my life and career, and because of this, I've learned a lot. Instead of feeling defeated countless times, I've used it as fuel to drive me to work harder. So today, join me in accepting our failures. Let's use them to motivate us to work even harder. That was Phil Mickelson on May 11th. He tweeted that and then promptly went out and won the PGA Championship as a 50-year-old. William had front row seats to all of it. I thought it was amazing to watch. It's probably, I don't know. I think it was close to watch it, just as good as watching the Masters for me. I think the Masters probably delivers the content a little bit better and it's easier to see a lot more stuff. But as far as the way the course looked and the way people played and the outcome of it, it's one of the funnest golf tournaments I can remember ever watching. I watched a lot on TV. William, you got to see it up close and personal, and I know the rest of you watched as much as you could too, but what was it like being there?
I mean, it was pretty great. I mean, the breaks from work we're just watching golf, so it was kind of bouncing back and forth. But Saturdays, when everything kind of started getting surreal and crazy with Phil, because he shot that low number on Friday, then I saw him tee off on Saturday on 9, and there was 5,000 people watching him play on the 9th hole, and I was like, okay, this is pretty crazy. But overall, yeah, it was a great experience. I'm glad I did it. It's a lot of fun. It was pretty cool to have my place of employment host an event like that. So,
how many people did they let in?
It said 10,000, but I think it was more than that.
So Phil Mickelson won, 50 years old. He's the oldest major winner now by 2 years. It's his sixth major championship, his first one since the 2013 Open Championship. I didn't think he was ever going to win a tournament again. He has not played well for a while, for a few years. I mean, he's won on the Champions Tour. That's full of old people. He did not look like he was ever going to win a PGA tournament again. And he sort of, in a way, dominated the PGA Championship from start to finish. He played head and shoulders above everybody else that was there.
And this is the last one I thought he would win. They just kept talking about how long it was, and here comes a 50-year-old out here to beat everybody.
50-year-old who hits bombs, though.
That's what
he had the longest. I think he had the longest drive of the tournament.
That's crazy.
Yeah, he hit his drive. Go ahead, Tyler.
No, I was just saying he definitely hits his ball good. I mean, 50 or 90, he's crushing it.
Yeah, I mean, that drive on 16 on Sunday, 366. I mean, it was downwind, and there's that speed slot, but, I mean, that smoked. Yeah, I mean, he hits bombs, A, and he's really good around the greens. And if you don't hit your approach shots appropriately out there, you have to have a really good short game to get up and down. So, I mean, I guess – the end of the day, the course kind of fits Phil's mold there, you know, his game. So
you said one time last week before it started that you had sort of a list in your head of like 10 or 12 people that you thought could win it just because of the conditions and how long it was. And was Phil on your list?
No, but I was thinking about that on Monday and earlier today. And if I were to have, like, because I didn't really have, like, a dark horse winner, but he would be up there, like I said, because he can hit it off the tee. He's a pretty good ball striker, and his short game is the best in the game, you know, in the game of golf. So, I mean, like I said, his game fits the ocean course, but the guys who I had were like Brooks, Tony Finau, he played pretty well, Justin Thomas, just kind of guys like that, just guys who are pretty long off the tee and are pretty good ball strikers. But Phil was not on the list, but like I said, if I were to like go back and like kind of think of people who had a, you know, a long shot to maybe win, who has the game to might pull it out, it, I can see him on the list, but I didn't have him on the actual list of 10 to 12 people. No.
Brady, did you think Phil would ever win a tournament again?
Again, I don't think he would. Didn't think he'd win this one. A tournament? I think I could have seen him winning a tournament. I don't think I would have seen him winning a major, and definitely not this major. I mean, I know he hits it far, but still, I just wouldn't have thought a 50-year-old would win this.
Bobo or Tyler, do you ever think Phil's going to win?
I mean, I'm kind of like Brady. I thought he'd win again, but probably not this one. And just to back what you said of being a fun tournament to watch, like, that was a fun golf tournament to watch. When you say, I'm going to go watch a golf tournament on TV, you usually don't get so excited. But I read a thing on, I think it was on Twitter, talking about how many people tuned into it just because of how entertaining it was. NASCAR was racing at a new track, and one of the reporters said something about not getting the ratings that they normally do. And like three of the drivers commented back on it and were like, literal history was being made at a golf tournament. What do you expect? So, I mean, you have people from other sports chiming in about how entertaining and how popular it was. So I think that's a pretty good thing for the sport.
Me and you were watching Sunday afternoon, the last few holes, and the crowd of people that followed him up the fairway. Look, obviously it wasn't quite as big as Tiger winning at East Lake a few years ago when he came back, but it was the same kind of scene with people everywhere in the middle of the fairway and circling the green. It was pretty cool to watch.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely cool.
There were a lot of lead changes last round or the beginning of Sunday. Phil had a 2-shot lead going into it. I think he was down one after the first hole, then he was back up two, and then he was down again, and then he went back up. It was five or six or seven straight holes where there was like a 2-shot swing on every hole between him and Koepka, who won in 2018 and 2019, was going for his third PGA championship. I think it would have been his fifth major.
Fifth major.
So didn't think he was going to play that well coming off knee surgery. He didn't play that great at the Masters, but that was very soon after his knee surgery. But I didn't expect that from him. Tyler, how much of it did you watch?
I watched a fair amount.
Do you think Phil would win?
No, I mean, I never thought Phil would ever win again in a PGA event. I mean, aside from the Champions Tour, I really didn't. And I'm not a Phil hater. I like Phil, but just the way he's been playing in the past several years, I just didn't think it would happen. But my goodness, it did.
Yeah, I mean, he's just kind of become a social media star. Like, his social media content has kind of made him relevant, and him winning in the Champions Tour, obviously. But,
well,
like you said,
I mean, I think I said this to you, William, but I mean, if Tiger Woods never existed, I mean, we would be talking about Phil as essentially one of the all-time greats by himself. I mean, he's got 40 couple victories, 6 majors, you know, he's in his era and time, not playing with Jack and Arnold, like in his era, aside from Tiger Woods, he would be the best.
I thought about that after you texted us that, and you're right. If Tiger Woods didn't play golf, Phil Mickelson would be the best golfer of our generation by a lot. because right now, if active people on the PGA Tour, not named Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson has maybe double the wins of anybody else, the next closest person.
Yep. How many more wins would he have if Tiger didn't exist?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a good point.
A lot of big names struggled. Yeah. Dustin Johnson struggled. Justin Thomas struggled. Rory was okay. Harry Higgs finished in the top five. Our boy Harry Higgs played very well in his first major. I think, William, you can speak more on this a little bit. 18 and 17 are the two hardest holes on the course, or at least were playing as the two toughest on the course through the week. And he made huge birdie putts on 17 and 18 on Saturday, I think. I know 17's hard. It's a 200 and however many yard par three over water, so it makes it hard to begin with. But I know the way that the wind was changed a lot of things through the entire week.
Yeah, it really just depends on wind direction. Pretty much you're going to have nine holes into the wind, nine holes downwind, and it just depends on what the wind's doing. And the wind switched on Sunday to more of a southwest wind, which most of the weather we get comes from that direction, and that's like the prevailing wind this time of year. And that will have the finishing five downwind, which is a nice way to finish, but you have that middle stretch into the wind, which was the complete opposite of what it was doing for the Thursday and Friday round. And Saturday round is just kind of a crosswind. So it's all about wind direction and how each hole plays each day according to the wind. I mean, the whole course is tough. There isn't really an easy hole out there. I'd say the first hole is the easiest hole in the golf course. It's the most straightforward hole. But that's the reason why it has the reputation as America's toughest golf course, you know.
William, I don't know if you got a chance. I don't know if you got a chance to see any of the TV coverage of it or any of the replays, but I thought they did a good job. They were showing those wind patterns on the graphic. I thought that was interesting, and like they showed, you know, what it's doing today and what it was doing the past rounds. They did a really nice job.
No, and you have to out there because I mean that's a huge part of the golf course. Why it's so difficult? I mean it's long, but it's, you know, it's the wind, it's Mother Nature that makes it really difficult.
So I saw a stat. I'm going to try to make sure I explain this correctly so that everybody can understand it. The wind changed on Sunday. So the first three rounds, the wind was generally blowing in the same direction. So holes 1 through 4 and 14 through 18 go in the same direction. And then holes 5 through 13 go south.
It's the course is a big figure eight.
So the first three rounds, I guess the wind was blowing south into holes 1 through 4 and 14 through 18. And then Sunday it switched. So the first three rounds, holes 1 through 4 and 14 through 18, the cumulative score was plus 1,079. And holes 5 through 13, those first 3 days, cumulative score was minus 22. On Sunday, when the wind switched and changed directions, holes 1 through 4 and 14 through 18, the cumulative score was minus 47 after being plus 1,079 for the first 3 days. And then holes 5 through 13, which we're now playing into the wind, were plus 23. So that is a huge, huge difference just on the wind.
Yeah, like I caddied today for Stay Back, and we had the same wind pattern as they did on Sunday, and I had some older guys, and even for them, it's like night and day. And those holes into the wind will kick your teeth in.
Louis Oosthuizen, runner-up. It's his fifth major runner-up finish. We said Harry Higgs finished in the top five. Phil's win got him – he had an exemption into this PGA Championship. This win got him into the next five PGA Championships, I believe. automatically. Ricky Fowler played very well through the whole week. I don't think he ended up in the top five. He may have cracked the top 10. I'm not sure. He may have been just out of it. I think he was just out of the top five, but he had a lip out on 18. If he had made that putt on 18, it would have qualified him for next year's Masters and next year's PGA Championship. But since he lipped out, he did not automatically qualify for those tournaments now. So he's still got some work to do. The PGA Championship, sort of known for PGA professionals being able to qualify for it. Two PGA professionals made the cut, Ben Cook and Brad Merrick. Ben Cook played really, really well. Well, they both played really well. But that's kind of cool whenever that happens, and that does happen occasionally in the PGA Championship, and it's fun to see. So if somebody told you on January 1st, 2019, so this was before Tiger's comeback, this was Phil's, the beginning of Phil's kind of downhill, steady downhill decline. If somebody told you January 1st, 2019, you get another Tiger and another Phil major, you think you would have believed that?
Yeah.
Probably could have won a lot of money betting on Tiger and Phil both to win another major 3 years ago, 2 years ago, whenever it was.
I would say no, but what also with those two guys, it's like also like breaking down like the Phil thing playing well at Kiowa, like hindsight 2020. It's he's got the game to do well there. So like I said, it's just kind of it'd be a long shot bet, or you know, just a long shot in general. But I mean, if two guys are going to do it who are like kind of out of their prime, it's those two.
That's the thing, too. I mean, you can't ever really count Tiger out. Maybe you can't count Phil out either.
Not now, I don't think. Brooks Koepka had a shot there for most of Sunday. He was two shots back going into it. He actually had the lead a couple times, and Phil kind of pulled away from everybody in it. It wasn't, other than the excitement of Phil winning again, there wasn't much excitement as far as somebody else maybe winning. There was a little bit, but the big storyline with Brooks Koepka this week has nothing to do with the PGA Championship. It has to do with his interview after the PGA Championship and his lover's quarrel with Bryson DeChambeau now, which has been going on for a while, but it's kind of gotten amplified now since his interview. I'm sure everybody saw the interview.
He did continue his dominance in majors, though. I thought that stat was really cool that I sent to everybody. I think that stuff is just fascinating to me, of how big of a gap there is between him and everyone else in the majors since 2017. And to do it on a bad knee where he can't even read putts is even more impressive.
Do you have that in front of you? Because that was a really good one, and I don't think I have it saved.
I can find it. I think it was like 80. No, it was right. Like,
Lowest cumulative score to par in majors since 2017. Xander Schauffele's 20 under. Hideki Matsuyama's 25 under. Dustin Johnson's 25 under. Brooks Koepka is 84 under. That's the top four. That's pretty impressive. And that's coming off of Masters where he missed the cut too. So yeah, he's going to be in contention for all of them, it seems like. And he's not even 100% healthy right now. As long as he can get Bryson out of his head, he should be okay.
Why do you guys think he's so dominant in the majors?
He's like the kid who doesn't go to practice. He just comes to the games and is good.
I think I guess a lot of it's just that, I guess some of it's just that kind of attitude. Like, he's kind of – a lot of golfers are nice and cordial and, act friendly towards other golfers, and which is good. I mean, they're all friends and they all get along. But Koepka seems like the only one who just kind of has like a killer instinct, kind of, for lack of a better terms.
I also wonder if he just kind of has this approach like he doesn't care. And I'm wondering if some of these guys try to get an edge in these, lesser courses where they know which slope to hit it on. And he just kind of has this attitude throughout the year of, I'm just going to grip it and rip it. And that does him well when it's, you know, a smaller margin on these tougher courses.
You got to think of like the mental aspect too. Like you said, if he just doesn't care and he plays like that all year, when it gets to a major, when people are typically stressed over it, he's kind of has that stress free, I'm just going to go out and play, and probably ends up playing better because of it.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all that. And I think his just preparation for majors is, he's got the formula down. He understands what he needs to do. He kind of has that it factor. And I think that's the number one quality in his game. And that's why he does well in majors. I just don't think he really cares to prepare himself for smaller events, opposed to majors where he, it seems like he's always in it. So I think he just has that winning formula. And, yeah, he knows when he needs to turn it on. He knows when he needs to play it safe. It's just said he's kind of got it figured out.
I sent you guys a thing. I think it was a no laying up tweet where they talked about, somebody said Brooks Koepka was the creative player, the golfer used to create on the old Tiger Woods games, where you just make him have huge muscles and dress him in really weird, shitty clothes, and you simulate all the tournaments except for the majors, and then you go dominate. And it's not his fault with the shitty clothes. I don't know what the hell Nike's doing with their golf outfits, but they look horrendous.
His did, but I thought Tony Finau's looked pretty good. It was the same style, just like a very basic, like, black and white color.
Whatever they did with Tommy Fleetwood at the Masters was a travesty. They got these weird, just non-geometric shapes on everything, and weird color boxes, and I don't really know what they're doing. I don't like it, though. But I'm sure they pay very well.
Exactly. But did you see Jordan Spieth's shirt? Was it on Thursday?
Yeah, the gigantic Under Armour logo on the back of it.
That was the most disgusting thing I've ever seen.
But whatever. If Nike was paying me to wear their clothes, I'd wear whatever the hell they told me to wear. Brooks had a little bit to complain about not involving Bryson. He was not happy about the crowd on 18, which I think his comments got a little bit overblown, because he did say that if he was in Phil Mickelson's shoes and he was the one that won, he probably wouldn't have minded the crowd. So he kind of did throw that little caveat in there, but he wasn't happy about the crowd kind of surrounding him and his caddy and bumping into him, especially with a bad knee. So I think a lot of people heard those comments and thought he was just kind of being a big baby, but he did throw that little asterisk in there that, hey, not really that big a deal. But if I would have won, I wouldn't be complaining about it.
Yeah, no, so as soon as Phil hit his second shot on Sunday, I was like over past the driving range. As soon as he hit it, I just jetted towards the buses, because I was not going to wait around. It was just going to be a zoo getting out of there. So I didn't get to watch any. I rewatched it later. I couldn't watch it on the bus. I couldn't pull it up. But, I mean, it took him an extra couple minutes to get to the green before Phil. Like, the crowds were swarming him. And, you know, that's kind of unnerving when you have a big crowd like that and there's no, quote-unquote, protection. I mean, there aren't very many instances where professional athletes are swarmed by groups of thousands of people. So I can see why he got a little annoyed or didn't like that incident. But yeah,
I don't know if he was affected by it or if he said anything about this, but I mean, we only care about who won the tournament, but it's a big money swing between, you know, you might need to make that putt on 18 to get you a couple extra 100K.
That probably doesn't matter as much to him. I mean, he's not hurting for money, but somebody, if that had been somebody who that was their first time being that high up in a major, I'm sure that would have a huge effect on maybe their career. And me and Jarrett talked about this Sunday when we were watching, like, we have a hard time hitting a drive when a group lets us play through at the Lexington Country Club. I can't imagine what would happen to me if 10,000 people were surrounding me while I was trying to make a putt on 18 at a major tournament.
You're also a professional athlete, though. I mean, if you're in that position, you have to.
Right. I don't think it's necessarily an excuse. I think it's just something else you got to think about.
Yeah, yeah, Brooks, I mean, were to have made. Oh, sorry, Jared.
No, go ahead.
I got it pulled up. If Brooks were to have made that birdie putt on 18 and gotten solo second, like Brady said, it's a swing of over $250,000.
That's a lot of money. Even for Brooks, yeah. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then after the crowd stuff, there was the Bryson thing, which didn't come to light until the next day. And they were showing an interview with Brooks Koepka after he had already lost, and Bryson walked behind him, and you could clearly hear his metal spikes clanking on the sidewalk, which was annoying. I'm not entirely sure what he said anything directly at Brooks Koepka. I think there's a couple of different things that people have said that he said, but I can't tell for myself listening to the video what he actually said. But Brooks wasn't very happy about it and rolled his, I don't know if he was mad about it or just really annoyed at Bryson DeChambeau continuing to be a dickwad.
I think he's just annoyed with him in general. Just, I mean, I don't really let people push my buttons too often, and everyone's talking about how Bryson lives rent-free in Brooks' head, which may be true, but Bryson is just obnoxious. Like, I watched him on the range last week, and he had a group of people cheering for him, and he's getting over 200 mile per hour ball speed on the driving range, and he's hitting these balls that are like so high in the air, and they're not going anywhere, and people are just cheering, and the ball's running out 5 yards. He's hitting it like 305, 310 into that breeze. Lee Westwood's right next to him, and his apex of his drive is like 70 feet below his. He's carrying it 260, and they're running out like 30 yards past Bryson. And I'm like, this is not practical. Why are you practicing this drive into the wind? Like, you should be trying to hit a low drive here. But it's just all about the Bryson show. It's always about just getting his name out there. And like, now that I think about it, like, do you think him a couple weeks ago at Quail Hollow, like missing, like going back to Dallas was just kind of like a publicity stunt?
I don't know that in itself was a publicity stunt, but I don't think it had to. I think he probably had something to do with that information getting out to the public that, hey, look, Bryson went all the way back to Dallas and now he's coming to Charlotte first thing in the morning. If anybody else probably would have just not talked about it and you would have never heard about it. Go ahead, Brady.
My mind was going that way on just the two of them having this big feud now. I mean, they're giving out money for getting, you know, more interactions with fans or whatever you want to call it. And now they just happen to have this, I don't know. I've watched enough like boxing and UFC to wonder if, I mean, I think he probably is. I mean, all the things you're saying, he is annoying, but are they hamming it up a little bit trying to get some more, you know, publicity?
I think there's probably a little bit of that, but Brooks looked genuinely aggravated during his interview. Like, he looked like that really, really pissed him off.
Sure. And I mean, Floyd Mayweather is an asshole, but like, you know, I feel like people probably, you know, want to call him a bigger jerk than he really is.
Yeah.
It's entertainment, though. I mean, and I think that would do the sport of golf some good. Like, that gets entertainment ratings. People are going to watch. People see that and they're like, oh, that's funny. Like, I'm going to tune in next time.
I think this little feud is definitely getting more people. Just this thing between Bryson and Brooks has gotten more people to pay attention to golf in the past 2 days, mm-hmm. I think.
Now, my real question is, will they go all in? And will they pair them together? That's when the fix is in.
So, yeah. William, yeah. I think, William, you sent it to me or I sent it to somebody or we all sent it to each other. There was a – I don't think it was an official official US Open Instagram post or whatever, but there's a USGA US Open Instagram post that says tee times for the 121st US Open Championship are not yet available, but yes, Brooks and Bryson will be in the same group.
Yeah, I mean, that was a joke, but I hope the USGA does that. And I saw today, like, I'm not a big Barstool guy, but I saw that Brooks Koepka is playing Dave Portnoy left-handed. And Dave Portnoy apparently has, like, contacted Bryson's team. Bryson, I guess, you know, his manager, agent, whatever, about, like, getting Bryson on the bag for that event.
I saw that right before we got on. I guess I think you told me that.
Yeah, so.
There's a lot of side things going on with Bryson and Brooks. There's the Barstool thing, and then we'll talk about it here in a minute, but they're having the match that Phil Mickelson's been having, him and Tom Brady against Bryson and Aaron Rodgers. And when that got announced today, Brooks Koepka sent out a little tweet to Aaron Rodgers saying, "Good luck, buddy," or something like that. And
sorry, bro.
And then Bryson responded back to that, poking the bear a little more. So that'll be fun.
Now, there was some video that went viral last week before all this, a practice round, because Bryson was wearing shorts. You can wear shorts in the practice round. And someone, I think he was hitting a drive on number 7, so it's the second par 5 on the front 9. And he's either 6 or 7. It looked like it was on the front 9, but someone was like, "Way to go, Brooksy," calling Bryson Brooks. And it was like, whoever called me Brooksy needs to get out of here.
Yeah.
So.
There's no love lost there. I'm firmly on Brooks Koepka's side in this argument, and I will be for as long as it lasts.
Have you met anyone that's not? I want to know the people who are out there that aren't on his side.
Well, I put out a poll on Instagram, and there were – I don't know if I can even find the results of it now. It might be too late. But there were a few people who were on the Bryson side, which is stupid. But
The only people who were wearing – Puma stuff all week. You know, there used to be the strong Ricky Fowler following, you know, with all the orange. But everyone who's wearing Puma stuff was just like jacked old dudes who were all watching Bryson, or like chubby little kids wearing the Bryson Payne Stewart hat, like driver hat. I was like, these are the, you know, the two type of fans that Bryson DeChambeau has, like chubby little kids and older men who are way into working out.
You know how the NBA and like NFL can put out who buys jerseys and stuff? I wish there was some sort of metric that we could see who likes who on the PGA Tour.
That would be really cool to see.
Well, we do know someone who has Bryson DeChambeau clubs.
It's true.
He is playing in the match with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers doesn't seem like somebody who would like Bryson, but I don't know. Maybe they're – Aaron Rodgers is kind of nerdy and quirky, so maybe they'll get along. But Aaron Rodgers and Bryson DeChambeau are playing against Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady. I feel pretty certain that Aaron Rodgers is a better golfer than Tom Brady. I think I've seen Aaron Rodgers play before in some of those pro-ams, and I think he's pretty decent. Tom Brady didn't look too great other than the one shot he had where he split his pants and hit an approach shot in on whatever hole it was when they played last. But if I was a celebrity, I don't think I would want to play in one of these tournaments with Bryson. I don't think I could do it.
Who would you want to play with?
Jordan Spieth.
Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, Phil would be fun to play with. It seems like in all these things, Phil Mickelson's kind of – he talks a lot and kind of plays it up for the camera, but that's part of it.
Aaron Rodgers just doesn't feel like the right fit for him. Like, it almost would have to be someone just so – like Charles Barkley just to kind of clown on him and, like, maybe bring out, like, a more human side. I feel like they're just going to come off as probably, like you said, kind of nerdy and weird together.
I'm interested in seeing it just to see what Bryson's like not playing in like a competitive tournament type of golf. I want to see how different he is.
Yeah, I want to see that too, because like Charles Barkley and Phil Mickelson were like the best team to watch. Like their banter was hysterical.
And I don't remember if it was that one with Charles Barkley or the one before that where Justin Thomas was riding around in the golf cart kind of commentating on stuff. He was really good at that and was really funny. So hopefully they do something like that again. Maybe they'll put Brooks in a cart and have him ride around doing the commentating.
Yeah, but Brady, you're 100% right. Like Aaron Rodgers is, you know, like he's been hosting Jeopardy. Like he's a little bit of a nerd. Like you need someone like a larger than life personality to kind of bring Bryson back to earth. I don't know if that's possible, but
yeah,
I don't. Yeah, I just don't think he could really kind of like dumb it down and just play like a fun round of golf. It's all just so analytical for him.
They should put a like Pac-Man Jones with Bryson DeChambeau let him play. Get in a fight on 12 and get thrown out of the tournament.
Pac-Man Jones is the one you landed on to play with DeChambeau.
Yeah, he said life with a life personality. I mean, what is more larger than life than getting in fist fights at every airport in the continental U.S.?
Who would win in a fight between Pac-Man Jones and Bryson DeChambeau?
Pac-Man Jones, yeah. for sure. I mean, he's way more experienced.
I've heard Pac-Man Jones is a lot of fun, but it's some guy you don't want to mess with. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Anybody got anything else they want to talk about the PGA Championship? Phil Mickelson, Bryson, Brooks, anything?
I'm just happy how good the course looked on TV. You know, working there every day, I'm glad everyone got to see it for its true beauty. And like I was texting with y'all today, I hadn't really seen the course. I know how dry they got it. I mean, you could see how it was dry on television, but they got it pretty firm and fast. It was pretty awesome.
It looked,
I was happy for everyone to see it on that national stage.
Well, it showed up, and I think it was built for a Ryder Cup. It's hosted a Ryder Cup. It's had a PGA Championship before. So it's the second major tournament in addition to the Ryder Cup, and I think it stood out, and I think people are starting to talk about it a lot.
Yeah, and so it's open to the public too. I mean, it's a little pricey, but anyone can play it, which is a huge draw.
What were you going to say earlier, Brady?
We're going to do like picks in next week for – okay. I did just want to say, like, I was thinking about it. I mean, I don't know if you could have picked a better tournament, just like the score that it was. There were the big names up at the top. I know you talked about it earlier, but, man, that was the best golf tournament I've watched in a while. Somebody made a good point today that the Masters is, you know, like the best, but – guys learn that course. Like the fact that it was, you know, such a tight race and it's a course that they don't know as well. It was hard to beat even compared to the Masters. I found myself tuning in more to this, I think.
What was his final score? Was he 6 under, 7 under?
He was 6 under.
6 under winning a golf tournament, I think is great. I like watching people go out and shooting a low number. I thought it was cool when DJ was 21 under or whatever he was at the Masters, but 6 under at that golf course, I think shows how difficult of a golf course it was, how difficult the conditions were and how well you had to play to win it. And I think it wasn't a fluke that Phil Mickelson won at Kiowa. He played better than anybody else for 4 straight days and handled the conditions better than anybody else. But I thought seeing somebody do all that, play as well as he did and finish 6 under, I think it says a lot about the course and a lot about the setup and a lot about the Ocean course being a major championship course. And I thought it was awesome.
I do have one more thing. This might be something that I was just locked into, but because I was watching so much of it, I was like, I wanted to bet on something on Sunday. So I ended up betting on my boy Finau over Cantlay, and he ended up beating him, but it was because of the 17th hole, right? Cantlay took so long on the 17th hole that there was like a backup. Guys were just standing at the tee. I don't know. I thought that was just kind of an interesting wrinkle at a major on Sunday to have guys waiting. Like, that's kind of cool that they have that hole where that's possible to just kind of add to the drama.
And Cantlay is slow. He plays slow, very, very slow. I've seen videos of him, like, from when he addresses his ball to when he actually hits it. It's like 45, 50 seconds sometimes.
But did you see what happened? Like, he hit it over to the left and then hit it in the water and, like, went and looked at it and was going to maybe take a drop. But it took forever. But I don't know. I thought it was cool at the end of the course.
And 17, they moved the tees all the way back on Sunday. So they had them moved up earlier in the week to right the middle of the greens, right at 200 yards. So they moved them back. So the middle, you know, looking at 220, 225. So, they hadn't really seen that yardage. I mean, even in the practice rounds, they didn't really see it because it was all into the wind. You didn't really need to hit that shot. So it was probably a mind fuck, excuse my language, for all those guys, including Patrick Cantlay, who's so analytical about everything, who needs to break down every possible situation. And that's the beauty of the golf course. They didn't even play it all the way back. I mean, they can move those tees around. That's why it's so hard. It's just there are so many options out there.
I have two more nerdy kind of golf questions for our insider. Two kind of new things, the rangefinder and then the fact that you could ground your club and take practice swings in the bunker. Just wanted to get your take on how much you saw of that and what it was like.
So the Ocean Course has always played all of their sandy areas as waste, even in the Ryder Cup. And the reason for that, you can't keep consistent sand out there with Mother Nature, the wind or rain. All of the paths are even sand. So a lot of the sandy areas you see throughout the course are actually like cart paths. So those get packed down from vehicles driving on them. The wind's blowing, it's going to blow any loose sand out. And if it rains at all, that sand's also just going to pack straight down. So it's hard for them to have any consistent sand. So if there's any event, it's all waste for that reason. And they did fluff it up for those guys. Like, I was out there today, and those guys were – the maintenance crews were making sure that sand was manicured and ready to go. But, like, if you don't touch it for a couple of days, it's like hitting off concrete. And with the rangefinder, I don't think it really slowed anything down. I think the PGA Tour and the USGA, just golf in general, I think they need to get away from some of the yardage books they give out. Like, that's way too much information. I think they kind of dumbed down the yardage books and let them use their rangefinders, and I think that will kind of level out the game and also kind of speed things up. But also, it's just an adjustment. I think it might take a while if they do decide to do that. Like, people just to kind of get in the swing of things, get a routine down with the rangefinder. But I think the rangefinder, it's turning the corner for technology with golf, and I think it kind of needs to be done, because that technology has been available for amateur players, high level amateur players, for quite some time. So
those guys have their yardage books dialed in close enough to where they, I mean, the rangefinder's not helping them any more than their yardage books were anyway. And I knew going into this that they were going to allow them, and it wasn't very noticeable. I saw Phil use it a couple times, but nobody's talked about it slowing anything down. So I got no issue with it either. Congratulations, Phil Mickelson, 50-year-old Phil Mickelson, sixth major, oldest major winner in history. None of us picked him to win or be in the top 10. I don't remember who we picked. We probably sucked. Brady, you probably had the highest finish with Finau, maybe.
Yeah, he finished top 10.
Finau did?
Yeah, I cashed $30. But yeah, Justin Thomas, Max Homa, Rory McIlroy did not finish top 10.
Yeah, Max Homa struggled pretty bad. This week, is the Charles Schwab Challenge in Fort Worth at Colonial Country Club. Got a chance to make up with some top 10 picks this week. Where are we at on our standings right now, money-wise, Brady?
We are, as a whole, down $98. I'm down $9. William's down $82.50. Wes is down $25.50. Tyler's up $39. Bobo's up $20. And then I counted up just to see how many wins we have. I have 5 wins on the year. William has 3. Wes has 4. Tyler has 7. And Bobo hasn't picked all of them, but is still searching for his first.
Nice.
So this week's the Charles Schwab Challenge. It's in Fort Worth. A lot of guys from the Texas area are playing it. Not a ton of big names. A week after a major tournament, probably not the best tournament. Probably not a lot of people watching. But the Charles Schwab Challenge has been around for a while. Colonial Country Club's pretty well known. Daniel Berger won last year. I think this was the first tournament after COVID stuff started. Colin Morikawa missed a 3-foot putt that would have either extended it or won or something. Daniel Berger ended up winning in a playoff. Phil is playing this week. Phil's playing. Will Zalatoris is playing. Justin Rose, Patrick Reed, Scotty Scheffler, our boy Abraham Answer, still without Dale the caddy, I believe. No word on his immigration status from Canada. Justin Thomas is playing. Daniel Berger's back. Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa. I read something. I was thinking about people to pick for this, and I was going to thought like maybe this type of tournament would lend itself to somebody new winning who hasn't won a tournament before. But then I saw something that there hasn't been a first-time winner at this tournament since 2001 when Sergio Garcia won his first tournament. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the way the course is set up. It's not good for people who aren't familiar with it. But just a little thing to throw out there if you were thinking about picking Will Zalatoris to win. Bobo, who are you taking this week?
I'm taking Phil. Confidence is up. Performance is there. I want him.
It's a tough ask for a 50-year-old to win 2 weeks in a row.
He's going 2 in a row. He's got his confidence back.
Any guesses as what his odds are to finish top 10?
Better than they were before last week.
Plus 500 to finish top 10, and to win, it's plus 7,000. So,
do you think there's ever been odds higher than that for somebody coming off of a major win?
I'm sure there has been with like Ben Curtis or Sharp McKeel. No, Keegan Bradley, he's young, and he won earlier in the year, he kind of had the hot hand. He played consistent golf before the PGA Championship, but no, it was kind of the dark horse winner. But yeah, it's been a while, I'm sure.
Keegan Bradley made me think. This was a note I had from the week. Why does it look like Keegan Bradley is swinging his son's clubs?
He does. He bends over his back is parallel with the ground before he swings.
Looks so weird.
He's a quirky guy.
Yeah, his setup when he's when he kind of walks over to the ball before he addresses it, his pre-shot routine kind of waddles to it.
William, who are you taking this week?
I'm in a slump. I need to – I don't know what the fuck's going on. I'm going with Abe Answer. He had a shot 65 on Sunday. He played lights out. He's been playing great golf. He lives in Texas. Give me Abe.
Good pick. He's plus 188 to finish top 10.
He would be a first-time winner. William, I don't know if you can answer this or not. He shot a 65. I read something that 65 may be tied for the course record at the Ocean Course. But they're not sure because it was sort of redesigned in a way after a hurricane came through. So there was a 63 before, and then the course changed, and now 65 is the course record on the newer design.
Yeah. So Alex Checo, has the course record of 63. I believe he shot that in 1997 in the World Cup, Golf World Cup. And they only played the golf course at like 6,800 yards for that. But, Wes, you're right. The course was redesigned. So the 2007 Senior PGA was held at the Ocean Course. And they redesigned the 18th hole to put in the new clubhouse. And they made a lot of the waste areas. They put some grass there so balls wouldn't plug as much. So there was a little bit of a course remodel. And they did switch over to the past Palom strain of grass. So technically 65 is the lowest score on the course since it's been renovated, yes, but the course record is still 63 because it's, you know, it's still the same golf course. They just did a couple things here and there.
Got it. You're taking the answer, but I took Phil. Brady, who you got?
Who do you think I got?
Good job. Sticking with him, huh?
He's my guy. I don't know why. I can't explain it, but I love Tony. Full on driving the Tony train. He's plus 188 to finish top 10.
I thought this number would be higher, but you've only picked him six times since we started doing this to finish.
I've won with him three times. Just want that.
That is correct. I wanted to pick Will Zalatoris or Scottie Scheffler, but I'm a stats guy, and I'm not going to go against the stats saying that first-time winners aren't going to win here. I'm going to take Jordan Spieth to win in Texas.
Nice. Brady, I told you all this in the group chat, but I was in a PGA pool and I had the eighth pick and I was like, I'm just going to go with Brady's advice every week. And I picked Tony Finau and I won $180, so $140.
I was just looking through this. I got the list in front of me of who we've picked, and I got them highlighted when we've won. And I was looking at names of people that have actually won or finished in the top 10 for us. Tony Finau has done it for Brady three times. Jordan Spieth has gotten us top 10s a couple times. Brady picked DeChambeau. Victor Hovland's done it for a couple of us. John Rahm, Justin Thomas. But then Tyler wins when he picks Scottie Scheffler and Cameron Tringali. So, thought that was interesting. Let's see. He had to leave earlier. He's at work and got busy, so he had to leave. We'll get his pick later on, but we got Finau, Abe Anser, Jordan Spieth, and Phil Mickelson, and then whoever Tyler picks. We are going to do the mystery golfer. We got it terribly wrong last time with Lanny Watkins. Before we do the mystery golfer, though, since we are big advocates of women's golf, the women's NCAA championship is going on. I don't know if they're finishing today or tomorrow, but it's Oklahoma State and Ole Miss now are the two teams left in it. And I watched a little bit of that. But we're not huge Barstool people, but they did they hosted a tournament. The Barstool Foreplay guys sort of made this whole thing come together. They're last week, 2 weeks ago, one of the NCAA regional tournaments got canceled because it rained, and they said the course was not playable for championship conditions. So a lot of people who would have played in a regional golf tournament, maybe their last college golf tournament, didn't get to play. And Barstool Foreplay set up this tournament in Arizona, invited all these teams and players that didn't get to play in that because of people making dumb decisions about a wet golf course, and invited them all out there. Everything was paid for, lodging, travel, food, all of it. And they played in a tournament for a lot of them. It was their last college tournament and it was really, really cool and wasn't televised or anything like that, but there was a lot of videos, a lot of kind of content coming from that and a lot of good experiences for a lot of college golf players. And I thought that was really, really cool. So as much shit as we talk about Barstool, and they do some really, really good stuff, and that was one of them.
Well, if you want more ammo for hating them, though, they did do it during a major golf tournament, which is pretty stupid.
Yeah, they couldn't. I mean, the timing, I don't. They couldn't really – couldn't do a whole lot with the timing. Either way, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I did see Frankie and Trent about six times last week hanging out in the range.
Yeah, I think Riggs was the only one at the women's golf tournament. And you remember him – the waterworks at Pinehurst when he was leaving Pinehurst and cried. He did cry again when he was giving his speech this thing. So I think he does get a little emotional. I can relate to that.
Huh?
That's right. I kind of respect it. I think I probably would have cried too.
Yeah. Frankie and Trent were like wearing long sleeves because they're so sunburned. And they did not look too comfortable with what they were wearing. It looks like they were sweating profusely.
William, give us a winner this week. Who do we got?
Wait, are we talking about mystery golfer?
No, mystery golfer.
So we're doing mystery golfer right now.
Yeah, let's do it. If you're ready for it.
Yes. So he's American, 12-time PGA winner. He won two times on the European Tour. He has one major victory, 4-time Ryder Cup participant. He's been the captain once, and he's participated in one President's Cup. He went to Florida State.
Yeah. Got to start looking up who the Ryder Cup captains are.
The two Florida State players I know have not been Ryder Cup captains, obviously. They're too young.
He won the PGA Championship.
He didn't win it at Kiowa because that was Rory last time. Won a PGA Championship. Playing in four Ryder Cups is a lot. That spans a decent time period.
Yeah, I mean, being a Ryder Cup captain is a pretty big deal.
Not Brooks Koepka.
Yeah. When I think of Ryder Cup captains, I think about recent, like Steve Stricker.
Didn't we say we were going to remember someone from the last time that we guessed? Who was the right answer last time, William?
Lanny Watkins.
He was a Ryder Cup captain as well.
But I thought we had another pick. We're like, that would be a good guess. Let's save that for next time.
Probably. I don't like Jim Furyk. I don't know if he was a Ryder Cup captain. He seems like he might have been the last. I think he was the last Ryder Cup captain, actually.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of along the same sort of – I think of Jim Furyk and Steve Stricker sort of together.
Yeah.
Could be that. Yeah. Jim Furyk seems like he maybe had around 12 wins. How many wins? I don't even know what that compares to. Justin Thomas probably has around 12 PGA Tour wins, right?
Yeah, it's probably right around there.
So that's somebody who, I mean, was obviously you got to be fairly successful to be a Ryder Cup captain.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he's got a major, and he did captain the United States to a win when he was Ryder Cup captain.
So that wouldn't be Jim Furyk then, unless
he was before Jim Furyk. He's a little older than Jim Furyk.
So Jim Furyk was the captain the last time when they lost in France. So, I don't know who it would have been before that. I don't know. That was my best guess, was Jim Furyk. Somebody like
he was part of the 91 Ryder Cup at Kiowa at the Ocean Course. Team USA.
Not Payne Stewart. Um, There was a lot of talk about that too when this week because of where this tournament was, and Bernhard Langer missed a putt on the last hole that would have kept a trophy for Europe. I know that. I don't know.
He's pretty big in golf, the golf world, and television side of golf.
I don't know. I got nothing. Jim Furyk was my best guess. We're all going to feel like idiots.
He was the 2008 captain at Valhalla in Kentucky with the team that didn't have Tiger.
I mean, we're going to feel stupid once you tell us.
It was a team with, like, Boo Weekly and Anthony Kim. Or do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, I got nothing.
Paul Azinger.
He's a big TV name. That's a good one. We had a chance on that one, at least.
I was trying to go with the PGA Championship theme, Kiowa theme.
We just need to start doing more research before we come on here. Get a few names in our head. I like that one. That was a good one. Last thing we got, Tiger Woods, win number 10, was the Motorola Western Open in 1999. 15 under, won by 3 shots. Coming into this tournament, he had fallen out of the world number one spot. David Duval was number one. Tiger Woods won, put him back into the world golf rankings number one spot, which he stayed in for a long, long time. Nobody's ever getting close to that record. Anybody got anything else?
Yeah, I realized halfway through this that I missed a prime opportunity since Phil Mickelson's now the oldest major winner. You know who's third?
Old Tom?
Old Tom Morris. I mean, it was just right there on a silver platter for me. I didn't take it.
We haven't talked about Old Tom in a while. We need to bring it back. That's all I got. Congratulations, 50-year-old Phil Mickelson, PGA Championship. We'll be back next week with the Charles Schwab Challenge results. Make sure to always tip your cart, girl. Thanks for listening to us this week. Be sure to check us out on Instagram at @first_tjitters. And check out our website at firsttjitters.weebly.com. Also, if you're interested in learning anything about bourbon, be sure to check out the Barrel Brothers podcast. It's the Barrel Brothers, available on Spotify Podcast, Google Podcast, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen.